Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential. In today's episode of the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, we're going to talk about business resilience and the role it has to play in early stage and small businesses. And I guess the starting point from this, Bhairav, is what is business resilience?
So if you'd asked me this before the podcast, I would have said something slightly different to what I'm going to say now, because in the last week, I think I have tested my own business's resilience, right? So when we first kind of came up on this topic of business resilience, what I wanted to talk about was, you know, how would you deal with not just a failure within, let's say, you know, COVID is a good example of what people talk about business resilience. Actually, I think COVID is about business continuity. It's not about resilience, right? So resilience and continuity are two very different things. And initially, what I thought we would discuss is, you know, what is the difference between continuity and resilience? But now, having had this week that I've had, I kind of realized that really, when I talk about resilience, it's not just about a business perspective, but it's a personal perspective as well, as being a business owner. So, you know, originally my whole thought was business, and there's a big kind of movement, let's say, around business resilience at the moment in certain circles. So there's, I think I was at a talk the other day in Scotland, actually, and it was a lady from IBM who leads a business resilience consulting arm within IBM. And she talks about the fact that what happens if you have a scandal in the office, right? And, or there's some sort of big brand failure, how resilient is your business to that? And what she was trying to highlight was that if something goes wrong within the business, do you have all of the numbers to hand? Do you have an action plan on how you deal with communications, marketing? Do you have, like, not only external but internal? But actually, now I look at it, is that because we're talking to solo entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and small business owners, resilience means way more than that.
Right, that's really important for me, because that's fair. When you said, let's talk about business resilience, my head just about exploded in terms of having worked in a larger business where we called it a risk register. But we worked on ensuring that we had a view on everything that might reasonably go wrong. And then we scored as high, low, medium, and high risk. And the high risk stuff we actually had plans for. And the low risk stuff, it was low impact. We kind of said, we didn't deal with that when it happened. But it was a never ending task. The amount of time that we spent on it, touch wood, because we never had a major problem, was a complete waste of time and money. But had one of those high impact things happened, high risk things happened, it would have been the best investment we ever had. And when we had hundreds of members of staff and everybody could give a bit of time to it, it was easy to spend $10,000 on it. You can't spend $10,000 covering every single permutation when you're either a startup or a relatively small business working in a dynamic world where you don't actually know what's coming down the line. A good pal of mine that works at Scottish Enterprise used to be involved in a lot of these kind of things and these kind of planning events and, you know, and what is a large profit there. And he's now living on the fact that he was always the smart arse in the room when he said, so what are the risks? And he would say, a global pandemic. And everybody goes, George, shut up. There's not going to be a global pandemic. And as he now says, nobody's saying that anymore.
All right. So, I mean, okay, my point of view here is on that. So I went through this in Aztec, right? So when we were I mean, I've been through many companies, but the one where I was doing it myself and building all of these policies and procedures in Aztec. And I remember writing down in my risk register, BIRAV gets hit by a bus. Do you know what I mean? So it was like, what happens if I die tomorrow? What's going to happen to the business? One thing I realized is I spent all those hours doing it, and we got Ernst & Young coming in and helping us with all of this stuff, right? It was done, dusted, put on a shelf. That's it, right? It never looked at again. I mean, I looked at it occasionally, but the CEO, CEO, those two guys, I don't think they even knew it existed, because we put it as part of our due diligence pack for investors, right? But they didn't have a fucking clue what was in it, right? Yeah. And so for my problem with all of that, thinking back on what I originally wanted to talk, was that it's all useless, because ultimately you'll write these things down.
It's not useless if you are a large organization that needs a plan that everybody can be saying when the shit hits the fan, and everybody knows this is our playbook.
So how many big organizations have you been in? And you obviously were at Team Rock, and then you were at MD of the advertising company.
Yeah.
How often did you update that plan?
Never.
Phone numbers.
Well,
this is the point, right?
We didn't have one in the ad agency. Let me come to that in a minute. We did have one at Team Rock, but we never had any of those high-risk issues happen. But there are loads of large corporates who use it all the time. Seldom is it the highest risk, highest impact thing that happens. But for example, a real live issue, you know, my personal experience of, call it business resilience or entrepreneur resilience or business continuity, was when we had our ad agency, we did a management buyout. We bought the business of the previous management, four people, and really two of us who led it, and we became joint managing partners. And the idea was, together we would run and drive this business. 2 weeks to the day after we signed that, I sat in the room and was told, you've got a very aggressive cancer growing in your neck. You may not live, and you certainly won't be at work for 6 months. We had no plan for dealing with anything like that. We had no key man insurance. We had nothing. And you know what? Those guys played a blinder. Because I had to give up at that moment and say, all I care about is being alive. And you're going to have to make sure this business gets through. And some things went a little bit wrong, but the business was still there 6 months later. So arguably one might say business resilience simply comes down to the personal resilience of the people that are running the business.
Well, yes, I agree to that. But also what I would say is that it's about building the resilience as part of your business, building your business in a way that it is redundant and resilient, right? So I think what I'm trying to get at is that you can have all the nice risk registers that you want. You can have the business continuity plans that you want. You can have the emergency phone numbers. But when shit hits the fan, actually, you'll look at that and you'll realize, well, there's no steps for what I need to do, because of what you'll need to deal with is so out of bounds, right? You can never really predict all the things that you need to do. Funny thing was that one of the guys, when I was, that Ernst & Young was saying to me, well, one of the issues that he had was that there was a murder, two people murdered each other, like one person murdered another colleague in the office. So what do you do then if you can't be in the office for 2 weeks? And I was like, okay, that sounds bad. But actually, ultimately, all that is that you can't get into the office, building collapse. But really what we're talking about is where there are key individuals or key things that happen in the business that where you just aren't able to function, right? And you have to then build that as part of your organization structure, as your business. So to go back to the issues that we've had this week, right? We, you know, half of my senior management team disappeared because of personal issues this week, which meant that I had to go from my normal role of going out there and doing sales and podcasting, whatever it is I do, which I'm not quite entirely sure what I do, but going out and actually running the business on a day-to-day basis, right? And because we'd standardized, and because we had, you know, I had weekly meetings to understand what was going on and within each thing, it wasn't a situation where I was going blind into every project. I was always on top of things. I didn't have huge amounts of detail, but then I knew where to go to get that detail, and I knew that I could read it and I could be up to date within an hour rather than a week. And I think this is the key thing. I think what a lot of people, when I talk to them about their business and I talk about business resilience, they're not you know, they just, oh, well, what happens when the server goes down or when the website goes down or when an app goes down? And that's not really it, right? That's easy to do, right? It's easy to build in backup and recovery and all these kinds of things. And yeah, maybe you lose an hour's worth of data, but what happens when you lose the key person, the key individual? What happens when, you know, a whole function, a whole department disappears for something?
So, you know, I filled off a little report in preparation for today from the Business Continuity Institute and identifies the most concerning steps that lead to business disruption. Let me just quickly run through the top 10 in order. In fact, no, in reverse order.
Cool.
Number 10 is a health and safety incident, which in effect doesn't mean one colleague murdering another one. That is
well,
right out there. Number 9 is the availability of talent or skills to bring into the business. Number 8, adverse weather, where all snows in. Number 7, disruption in the supply chain. Number 6 is disruption in utility supplies. Number 5 may be actually a murder, security incident around vandalism or theft. So all of those, and you know, I'm sorry, I really shouldn't make light of a murder. That's a horrific thing to happen in any circumstances.
But it's very random.
Yeah, well, exactly. You don't exactly have, we're going to have a plan for a murder, although I haven't got a great anecdote about that, about my colleague who worked in the Guardian, but I really shouldn't say it in the podcast, but it's hilarious. As John said, I knew the Guardian would have a policy for everything, and yes, they had a policy for this particular scenario, but I'll say no more. That's for off microphone. So all of those things are fairly normal business events. Something is wrong with health and safety. Yeah, it happens. We find it hard to find the right people. It rains. Something goes wrong with a supplier, or the internet goes down for a while.
Yeah, but they're all very obscure, though. They're very generic in the sense that, okay, I agree that those are all things that you need to think about, but they need to be adapted for your own business.
My point on that is that we have all dealt with every one of those many times. So in business, in true resilience about dealing with the day-to-day, I would say all of those are day-to-day issues that every business has faced. When I go a little bit further up the line to number 4, is an act of terrorism. And sure, like I remember 9/11, and the day after having an irate client screaming at me on the phone, why did you not deliver that package you promised you would deliver to my office in Belgium from Glasgow? And I said, are you not aware the entire world air system shut down yesterday because of 9/11, and that cut no grass with this client who was still absolutely irate that we had not delivered for her. Well, nothing I could do about that. All the planning in the world was not going to allow me to deliver a package internationally in 24 hours when the world air system is shut down. So acts of terrorism. Number 2 is a major data breach. Mm-hmm. Number 1 is a cyber attack.
Yeah.
But arguably, those ones and an unplanned IT or telecoms outage, which I must say, for me, feels a little bit like some of the earlier issues around interruption of utility supply, although maybe that specifically about IT. Some of those ones up the top that are the real worries, we can't actually have a plan for.
Well,
to do some reasonable things.
So the top 2 you can have a plan for. So I think the thing is, what I've been trying to do actively with Atom is work with cyber security providers and data organizations to find solutions for small businesses and startups, right? Because the problem that we've got, and I actually had a discussion on this 2 days ago, Thursday, and my whole point is it's a Scottish-based company that is looking to help companies not prevent, but protect themselves from malware, cybersecurity issues, right? And the issue that you've got is that all of these solutions that are out on the market now, they're all fantastic, wonderful, but they can scale up, but they can't scale down. So the issue that you see in the market is that, yes, if I can pay £1,000 a month, I can find a great service to protect my email and my data. But if I want to pay 100 quid a month, I can't. And I've talked to many, many providers and none of them can scale what they do down except for this one that I'm talking to now. But it's something that I think, again, part of business resilience is key. But in many ways, I see this as if you want to run a business and you are actually serious about running your business, this is just stuff you need to think about, right? It's like marketing, advertising, customer service. You've got to have business resilience. Cybersecurity as part of your...
Another note I've written down here is about insurance. It is as basic as, have I got building insurance? Have I got contents insurance?
Yeah.
And sure, you can buy an insurance policy that will give you cyber protection as well. But actually, a little bit like on your fire insurance, your building insurance, are you storing open vats of petrol all around the building? That's not a good idea. Because if there's a problem, it'll go loose. There's so much you can do around that cyber stuff. Let me just ask you a specific question about that. It's relevant to where I am right now and some of the work I'm doing with clients. Have you come across a certification called Cyber Essentials?
Yes.
Or Cyber Essentials Plus?
Yep.
That's something that has been really, really heavily promoted in Scotland right now. Mm-hmm. Effectively saying every business should have a Cyber Essentials certificate. It's not mandatory, but there's big grants available to help companies prepare for that. And that seems like total common sense, absolute common sense. And one of the challenges for me, being a non-technology person, is it actually, and in doing it, it actually made me address the questions I didn't even want to think about because I knew I didn't know the answers. But it made me go and find the answers.
Yes, and Cyber Essentials, you'll need for a lot of, if you want to be a supplier to the government or if you want to supply some large organizations, right?
Yeah.
You're going to need Cyber Essentials. The plus piece is not always necessary. Plus is much more around infrastructure, I think, in the workplace, which most
don't
have anymore, right? But it's a fairly straightforward thing to do. I think it's
The point of what the Scottish government is trying to do now is Scotland has an organization called the Scottish Business Resilience Centre. And near the heart of this, it's not to say this is a bit of a pain, a block, a hoop you've got to jump through to get onto a government contract. Mm. It is to act now and still that this is just standard practice. If you're not doing this, you're almost negligent. Because this is what you need to be doing in the world that we live in. Anyway, we're maybe diving a bit too much into that, but my point really here was around these big business resilience issues that were identified. Most of them are just day-to-day stuff. You don't deal with every day, but it is normal parts of running a business. And there's only a few that were big issues. But I think your point is, that is one way of looking at it. But you're almost talking about, a cultural resilience and a human resilience that is not just about the ability of an individual to keep growing when the times are really tough, but to build a structure and a culture that is around when the times are tough, we're actually ready to step up to the challenge.
Yes, and I think what I found was most heartening about the situation that we faced this week, right, was the fact that my senior guys went away, but the people that they lead, their team, just stepped up. Everyone to a man and woman stepped up, right? Everyone was very empathetic. Everyone was very supportive and there were no issues, right? I mean, I was quite surprised myself because I'm at that level where I don't hire everybody, right? I let my team hire people now. And so I'm not involved in every day to day. So a lot of these guys that I spoke to, I don't really know because I just I have my team to manage everything, right? I've got to do other things. But when I stepped into their roles, it was very easy and everyone understood and everyone. And I think that's the culture that we've built. And it's about A, who we're hiring, making sure that you want to hire people that you want to work with, et cetera. But it's also, I think, one of the key things that I want to make sure that we mention in this podcast is about your own personal resilience as a business owner and your own personal resilience as a human. Because the problem that we've got, and I was having this discussion last night with someone, is that no one really understands our pain, right? The issues that we go through on a daily basis are only known by anyone else who runs a business, because everyone looks at it and said, well, why can't you take a weekend off? Why can't you take that time off? And you say, well, I can't, because I've got X, Y, I've got things to do. And if I don't do these things, then the rest of the business, not necessarily doesn't work, but I don't want to be the bottleneck, right? And you want to make sure that everyone is functioning smoothly, because that's what your job is to make sure that the business is running smoothly. And I think that's one of the key things that when you're hit by this, what you don't hear on that list is the resilience within the leadership, right? What happens? Are all the leadership happy? Are they content? Are they, are they getting the support, whether it's mentally or emotionally or whatever it is that they need in order to run the business? And if they walk away, someone walks away, what happens to the rest of the group? What's the dynamics, right?
So that makes sense in a business with leadership. When you're in a smaller business, does this then translate down to every single person? And I hate talking about businesses. I mean, the most junior member of staff, because everybody is vital, or they shouldn't be there. But does that mean that every member of your team must be resilient? Because if it hits the fan, they've got to be able to step up to the mark and get on with it.
So this is an interesting one. I think it changes radically when you go from less. So we're 14 people, right? So we go from 14. It changes radically when you go from 14 to 50 to 50 to 200, right? Everything changes massively as the dynamics, because when you're under 20 people, everyone should. Okay, I'm not going to be prescriptive here, but everyone should really know each other to some extent in some way, right? Yeah. But when you're 50 to 100, 150, 200, you're less of that. So the process takes over when you scale, right? It's the process and the functions that give you the guidance. When you're smaller, then it is about everyone understanding each other. And I think the thing is, to get to your point, it's about the dynamics of the individuals, right? When you're small, you can't have an outlier. You can't have someone who's out there being me, because that's not going to work for the group, because the group has to be cohesive, right? Further up, when you have 300, 400,000 people, then you could have about 10% of them being me, because they'll, the process will take care of it.
I guess that's my question is, do resilient businesses, truly resilient businesses have me, people in them? Or are truly resilient businesses about us? Because everybody says, you know what? Life is a series of unfortunate events interspersed with glorious moments. And it's actually only when the unfortunate happens that we actually find out really who our friends are. The ones that are willing to be there when it's tough and do what they have to do, rather than just hang about when the times are sunny and happy.
So this is an interesting one in that, so my mum, she's 76 years old and working at Marks and Spencer's, right? Because she likes to work and she wants to do X, Y. She I tell her she doesn't need to work, but she wants to work. So she came home yesterday with a reprimand, right?
What?
Yeah, because what happened was that, long story short, someone complained about her. She was sitting at the checkout and someone complained about her, right? So Marks and Spencer, what they did was they reprimanded her. She's a 76-year-old lady, and someone wanted to scan a coupon code. The machine said no, couldn't scan it. She asked the person to read out, and the guy, who's my age apparently, took offense to that and said, well, why can't you do your job, and complained about her, right? So Marks and Spencer didn't actually support my mother. What they did was reprimand her and then took her off checkout and said, you have to stand now for 8 hours a day filling, stacking shelves, a 76-year-old woman, right? But what can you do? So I was sitting there pondering last night, what do we do about these situations? And you realize actually there is nothing, because Marks and Spencer have got rid of their HR function. Everything is now devolved to the managers. So if the managers aren't creating a us culture, right, then it all falls apart.
Yeah.
Right. But the problem is, because it's such a devolved setup, that, who gives a shit? right? And that's the thing.
Yes, so, absolutely. That's my point.
Yeah. And so but ultimately with these companies, because they get to a stage, because they've got their brand and they've got their way of being, they don't really care, right? But one, you're at our level, when we're talking to the people that we're talking to, the smaller businesses, you have to care, right? And you have to build that as just the base level. You've got to bring anyone you bring on board, you have to think, is this the kind of person that I want to have a beer with, and B, I want to be around if things go hard.
Yeah.
And I think we don't focus on that a lot enough, let's say, when we're hiring. And we talked about it, I think, before in our previous podcast, but I think when we're looking at resilience, et cetera, et cetera, it has to be the first 20 people you hire, you have to have that within the culture.
Okay, I guess we're getting to the point we need to sum up now. So let me just ask you a couple of things here. Should a small or a startup business invest any time trying to do a risk register?
Yes, if you want funding, because it shows that you've thought about it, right? So if you're going to go through a funding round, you need to have it. And it's actually a good discipline. Ultimately, no, because there are going to be so many things that can go wrong at that level. What you need to do is you need to have a, not necessarily a risk register, but an understanding or a protocol or a process in place for the issues that you'll face that will affect your business from a either reputational standpoint, monetary standpoint, or just individual employee standpoint, right?
Second point, what is more important, personal and individual resilience or business resilience?
That's an interesting one. Yeah, I think that individual is much more important than the business, because in many ways, if you've organized yourself, the business will survive. But there's a lot less support for you as an individual than there is for you as an organization, right? And I think that's true, because as I mentioned before, there's very few people understand what you're going through.
And final question on insurance. At what point should businesses just not bother insuring risk? What should they insure for? And what do you say, if that happens, it happens, we'll deal with it.
I think you're mental if you don't have any insurance, right? You'd be crazy not to have any insurance.
Well, there's some of the statutes and insurances you have to have.
So you have to look at your key.
When I sat down with my business broker, when we were starting up Team Rock, he basically said, here is the longest list of insurances that you can have, and everyone covers a valid risk. Let's start at the top and work the point out where we want to stop doing insuring risk. Because if you do it all, I'll just make a fortune and you'll be insured for loads of things that are probably never going to happen.
So, I mean, in this modern age, I'm not like we've got the public liability insurance. You know, if someone goes and punches someone, like one of my employees goes and punches someone else in the face, then, you know, you're insured for that. But to be honest, that's the last thing I really want. I didn't really need that. But things like litigation, brand or cybersecurity breaches, those are the things that are real key risks within your business. You have to have that insured, because, if you don't, you're going to be found out, and the losses could be massive. I mean, that's what's going to make or break your business, right? And having an insurer with you is a big support. And we recently went through something, and actually having the insurance legal team behind us was quite nice, because
my broker was immensely helpful on a couple of actually relatively simple things, and his advice was always, first thing, stop the bleeding. Second thing, phone me. Because I know about this stuff.
Yeah.
I know how I can get your insurer to help you solve this problem. That's part of the service. Well, thanks a million for that. That's, I guess what we've looked at is the concept of business resilience, and what do we really mean by business resilience. There is lots of valid stuff to do around those top 10 threats that the business continuity Institute has. I think my takeaway is that the most important part of this is actually a resilient attitude and a resilient culture that allows the business to overcome the hurdles that it faces, rather than investing huge amounts of resource and having a plan for everything that might ever happen.
Exactly, exactly.
Thanks for joining us today. See you next time on the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast.
Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.